Ni mustaglenja me stans Bagi bin, fideo spig breða Kartið bitir, krakk með gwydir Rem af reyfið í USA a Cymru garantí Byw locality, internet sar yn fyr Hiw dinas, fyw dinas, dyw Buy one, get one free Frame, food, laptop, bratiaid, hip-hop Please give on my man in gong Dwi'n isio make a bloody con A dwi jyst isio aros efo chdi Dwi jyst isio aros efo chdi
Croeso and welcome to Tales Wales, the podcast that never fails to, you know, Croeso and welcome to Tales Wales, the podcast that's as American as apple pie, is the fourth inning of the soul, a touchdown at the last minute of the game, and the making of McDonald's, oh, no, I ain't got the energy for this.
leave that in now.
Croeso and welcome to Tales Wales, a podcast that's American as apple pie, the fourth inning of the soul, the touchdown at the last minute of the game, the Making your I can't, I actually can't. You know what this is. It's
you
the
can't
podcast.
Get through it.
It's the American dream in audio form. That's all you need to know.
Depending on whether or not we cut out the first two tries.
No, keep them in. Just keep them in.
That was great. Very, yeah. very good.
I wrote it down.
I appreciate that. Oh, mate, that like, I could feel the effort you put into that third run as though you're like, right, apple pie.
Yeah, I'm fucking sick of it at the moment. I just don't feel
I'm
up for it.
Sick to goddamn death of it.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is. This is the podcast. This is the History Boys. We're back. We're bigger than ever. We're about to find out if King Kong Trump can take on Crooked Hillary. Don't even know who's playing on Tuesday.
who's playing next week, guys? Yeah. No, some good names.
Who we put
good
in
nicknames?
Who are you backing? Old Tonkin Trump or?
Well, if I was an American citizen, I'd be going for
the ham cam, the killer cam,
the killer cam,
yeah,
killer cam. I guess I'm trying to think of a good one then.
So let's give them nicknames to try and human, make it a bit less serious and a bit less intense. Because I'm sure, like we said it a lot of times, we got a lot of American listeners, and I'm sure there's on both sides of the coin. Yeah, both sides. So we don't want to upset people before the big
bash. We'd also love for you guys to comment and tell us what you think, because that's just juicy, man.
Yeah. Also, I do categorically think Trump's a bad person, but I don't think all Republicans are bad people. So I don't want to be like, oh.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
I think if I was like, I think I might have said this before, we'd probably cut that out though, but the, because it was part of a much wider discussion we decided to be.
It's a much more vitriolic campaign I went on.
Yes, yes. But I think if I was an American citizen, I think I would vote all Kamala Harris. It's Kamala, isn't it? Not it's like Kamala as in Kamala, not Kamala as in
like
Kamala.
Koala.
Yeah, koala. Yeah. Oh, but Kamala. Like, oh no, it doesn't make sense because it doesn't rhyme. Never mind.
What was it gonna be?
Yeah, I think I was gonna say Kamala the Koala Harris, but as you just demonstrated, that's not how you say it. So.
I always think of how Smithy says Pamela, Kamala,
you know. Kamala. Oh, that would, I tell you what, if that was,
numbers
I mean,
online.
In this weird Frankenstein's monster of a country I'm imagining now, where you smash America and Britain together, if that was a campaign where it's just James Corden coming in, kicking a door down and going, Kamala, I would absolutely be at the ballot box voting for you.
Yeah, so that's a hot American take. You know, we'd be interested to know who our listeners do vote for, because like, I imagine, you know, we're pretty fucking lefty fucking fanny magnets. I didn't mean that. I meant
fanny, lefty fanny magnets.
I meant, like, you know, we're quite
clearly left. That's what all the conservatives are calling us.
We're
the old lefty fan maggots.
Yeah. So I hope, you know, we do want to be a broad church. It's just, like we said, we think Trump's not, you know, who cares what our opinion is on Trump?
So what's come on, what's their nicknames then? So we got Kamala. Oh, sorry, Kamala.
Kamala.
I don't know if it's a nickname or just saying a name in a weird way.
Grumpy Trumpy. And he's there like,
Dumpy Trumpy.
If you don't vote for me, I'll be right pissed off.
Wasn't there rumors going around that when he was in court, he kept like farting and shitting himself? I don't know if that's true.
No, but, I did hear that, though. But he was that is funny, though. Court. Yeah, that is quite good.
I heard he was a real big smelly baby. That's what
he said. Yeah, and there's some stories about him with like prostitutes in Russia with the old shittage. But that's probably.
It's probably 100% true. Yeah. I just love the idea that he's like giving a deposition in court and like, so where were you, Mr. Donald Trump? Were you on there? And then, yeah, people going, oh my God, it reeks. Do you need to be excused to the bathroom, Donald? It's okay. I've got a diaper on. I could just shit myself right here.
Well, I don't know why we got on the topic of politics. I mean, it's hard not to get on the topic of politics, politics just before the election.
These were, just before the election episodes, aren't they? It's sort of one theme.
How do you think it's going to go? Should we have a little little bet?
Let's put some skin in the game.
Yeah,
you're saying.
Yeah.
I would. I don't know, because this is the thing these days, right? Do you remember when Black and White Day, right? Black and White Day. But there was, you know, when Facebook first started out and like Instagram and everything. Whoever you followed, you just got like a feed of whatever they posted within that time frame. Mm. But because of algorithms and stuff now, I don't tend to trust a lot of what I see, because like my Instagram comments will be like different to your Instagram comments and be very different from someone who's maybe like juxtaposed to me, like politically or whatever, because of what they watch.
Yeah.
So like I keep seeing loads of stuff that are like pro Democrat and stuff like that whenever I see comments about it, like on Reddit and whatever. And so that makes me think, oh, it seems like Democrats are sort of in the lead or whatever.
Yeah.
But I know that could be total bullshit. It's only for me I'm seeing that, you know?
Well, So America's weird. There's only seven states that actually kind of choose the election, because all the other ones are so clearly tribal. So you have seven swing states, and I think Kamala will definitely win the popular vote. So that's the thing where she'll get the most votes, like Trump, Biden got last time. He got like millions more. Let's see how many more. Biden
didn't Hillary win? Get the popular vote as well in 2016?
Yeah, pretty sure she did, but I'm not as clued up on that one.
I'm not clued up enough to know about like what the Electoral College like does and how it works.
Well, so they did it so the southern states would have more of a say, and because they're so much smaller, it's done like representationally. So just because you're a small state, you still get a lot of seats. So when it was drawn up,
if you got less population,
you still get a big amount of say. So these smaller states who represent less people get a big amount of seats compared to, you know, like similarly to like how California would, which is a really big one. So America's weird. Like there's only like seven states who kind of swing either way, and Pennsylvania is one of the main ones. And we'll be talking about that today because it's got a big Welsh heritage in there. But
of Welsh descent.
I think Kamala will definitely win the popular vote, which is where that means like if all 350 million Americans vote or 300 million Americans vote. If it was just on a poll of who got the most votes, it would most likely be her.
Some might argue that should mean you win.
I know. But I mean, nearly every country has a bad voting system. Like our one is shit. The first past the post.
Awful.
What do you reckon? Do you reckon we'll be waking up Wednesday morning to a orange America?
Ever since Harambe went, mate, you know, everything's gone pear-shaped, isn't it? So that's right. I remember reading some online where it was like, when Harambe died, the simulation went haywire. Yeah,
Brexit happened.
Now we're in like some sort of mad thing, yeah. But I'd like to think that they'd win, even though I know they've got their faults, you know, massively so. But I think that's got to be better than a Trump administration again, right? It's gotta be, surely.
Gotta be.
I hope that's what happens. Gotta be, bros. It's
gotta. Well, should we crack on anyway? Because I'm sure we haven't got. Or do you have a bit of levity to like see us out? Because I think this episode's been a bit heavy already.
If you want to hear about me not having any water this last weekend, is that levity enough for you?
Yeah, give us a bit.
Okay, so Friday, after Amy left work, I jumped in the shower, as I usually do. That's my routine. Yeah. And I noticed, oh, this is a bit weak. My shower's gone a bit weak, a bit fucking loosey-goosey on the water production. And I was like, oh, I didn't do anything of it. And I thought, oh, something to do with our boiler. And I was like, because I'm a handy boy these days, aka my father-in-law's taught me a few things, I was like, I know how to put the pressure up in the boiler. I was about to go do that when Amy rang me and was like, oh, there's a big incident or whatever. There's a pipe down the road, big fucking water pipe that's exploded or something. I don't know. And Welsh Water was saying, you know, no one's going to have any pressure or water for a while. So we were, without water all weekend, basically. And had to buy bits of water, you know, like bottles of water and everything like that. And then it very much illustrated to me the difference between what I consider like a chill day and what Amy considers a chill day. So like by the end of the weekend, Amy was like super frustrated. She was like, oh, I haven't been able to mop. I haven't been able to clean. I haven't been able to do all this sort of stuff. And at one point she literally said the words. She was like, all we've done is sat on our ass and watched films all weekend. And I was like, ding, ding, ding. That's exactly what I want to do. Yeah. I was like, this is great. This is how I want to spend my
This is life.
Weekend.
This is the best part of life.
This is squalor. The best. This is great. And because there was no water, I used that as a very sort of baseline excuse. Go, well, I guess I'll have a couple of beers. And there's water in beers, isn't there? I don't want to fucking dehydrate. And it's like, oh, we got loads of bottles of water. Look, I'll crack a beer and then we'll see what happens. Watch another film. Why not? But then turns out we phoned them up whilst water by, because we didn't have any water by Sunday even. And
gotta ask the question. What's your ones and twos saying?
Your ones and twos.
How are we having a wee? How are we having a poo?
Oh, right. Yeah. So we had to use our bottled water to fill up the cistern directly.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And do it that way. Like, wees, we were adopting a if it's yellow, let it mellow kind of approach.
If it's brown, flush it down.
Obviously the doses, the numero doses, you had to bring up a bottle of water with you and get out of there as quick as possible. I'm going to be a while. It turns out that we phoned them and turns out everyone else in the area had had their water back. And it was because it's something to do with like an air pocket in our boiler or something like that. It was stopping water coming through. And all we need to do was like jiggle the stopcock a couple of times. And it was sorted back. We could have done that apparently on like Saturday morning.
Uh-oh.
And it would have been resolved. But joke's on Welsh Water. I wanted to sit around watching films all day drinking beer. So joke's on them. But yeah, that was my weekend.
Oh, well.
What did you get up to? You've been ill, haven't you?
I think I had a pretty... life's a bit hectic at the moment, so just kind of doing a lot of, like, life admin. Well, admin sounds like a laugh. Life admin, I was trying to say.
Yeah.
I've got nothing hugely fun to go through, so should we crack on with our Americano
speciano? Should we just skip me, should we?
Yeah, and we'll carry on from where we dropped off last week, and I'll start off with... well, you actually kind of briefly touched on it, but I'm going to start off with how the Welsh found their home in America. So, the first modern documented Welsh arrivals came from Wales after 1618. In the mid to late 17th century, there was a large emigration of Welsh Quakers to the colony of Pennsylvania, which you just mentioned. And I mentioned this last week, that loads of people left the UK because they wanted a more religious country. And that wasn't as the case. They felt like the UKs weren't being as pious and religious as they were kind of hoping for. So a bunch of Welsh Quakers, they set up a thing called a Welsh Tract, which is like establish a region like just outside of Philadelphia, where it's like a community dedicated to like Welsh people and the language and like a mini Wales abroad.
Also, when you hear Welsh Quakers... can you not help but think of Quaker Oats?
Yeah, I know.
I think of them as just people who just, they're the ones who fill the pouches of Quaker Oats in the little microwave pouches. That's what I think.
For our American listeners, Quaker Oats are a porridge company.
A porridge company.
Which I imagine is what Quakers eat. by the 1700s...
The religion forbids anything else but porridge consumption.
Do you know Kellogg's? So Kellogg's Corn Flakes is named the cockerel, and the name Kellogg's comes from the wife or someone like that. It was a Welsh speaker, and Kellogg's came from the word ceiliog, which is Welsh for rooster.
Ceiliog, yeah, which is Welsh for rooster, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Wasn't he like a religious nut who wanted people to stop wanking or something?
Yeah, I think he made cornflakes to stop wanking, didn't he?
I know that sounds like I just made that up, but it's genuine. So yeah, I know our listeners, look it up.
I think he
was like, these lovely little breakfast cereals will stop people from masturbating. I'm sure that's a thing.
Yeah, I think he used to put it in like in your mattress so you would hear it crunch if you were tucking one off.
What? I never heard that before.
Yeah, I think that's how it came
double
about.
Double use. Lovely hearty breakfast and also put it in your mattress. Do you dare fucking have a tug while you're in my house?
Yeah. So this is it. Yeah, so the story of Nancy Richards, Welsh harpist, visiting the breakfast cereal developers, the Kellogg family in the USA. She pointed out that the name Kellogg was similar to ceiliog, Welsh for cockerel, hence the cockerel that still appears on the box of cornflakes today. So yeah, so we're getting sidetracked here with the old wanking cornflakes. So by the 1700s, Welsh people accounted for more than one third of the colony's estimated population of 20,000, and there are a number of Welsh place names in the area. The Welsh were especially numerous and politically active, and they elected 9% of the members of the Pennsylvania Provisional Council. So they were like really big parts of the community. During the Eisteddfod in the 1790s, Gwynedd Yon Society member William Jones, this is back in Wales, who had enthusiastically supported the American Revolution, so anti-British, he was arguing for the creation of the National Eisteddfod of Wales, and he wanted it to be a much bigger thing than it was at the time, and became disillusioned with Wales, and he became to believe that the completely anglicised Welsh nobility, through like rack renting and their employment of unscrupulous like land agents and stuff, had like they'd forfeited all their right for obedience and respect by the tenants. So they all these like
tale
Welsh
as old as time, isn't it? Of like sort of just losing Welsh autonomy.
Yeah. So by that he means Welsh people should abandon and turn against the English, or the Welsh who acted on behalf of the English, and they should down tools and, you know, all the skills that the Welsh have and just F off out of Britain and move to America. And at the Llanrwst Eisteddfod in 1791, he distributed copies of an address entitled To All Indigenous Cambro Britons, in which he urged the Welsh tenant farmers and craftsmen to pack up their bags and emigrate from Wales and sail to what he called the Promised Land of the United States. So he was trying to like really drive people away from Wales and start again in America. And then by the 19th century, thousands of Welsh coal miners emigrated to the anthracite and the bituminous mines of Pennsylvania, many becoming mine managers and executives.
Anthracite was the kind of coal that makes Welsh coal famous, because it's like a particularly
high quality.
Oh, what's the word? It's like very high quality coal. Yeah, and that's why like Welsh coal was so sought after. And yeah, I remember reading that there's only a few places in the world that have anthracite coal, and Pennsylvania was one of them.
So, well, these Welsh miners brought their skills in working with that anthracite, and they exemplified in the night. They also, these Welsh miners, they brought these skills of working in the anthracite, their management skills, organisational skills, and they even set up the United Mine Workers Labour Union. And its most famous leader, John L. Lewis, was born in a Welsh settlement of Iowa. So that the Welsh brought over their kind of more left-leaning views of like community-focused stuff and workers' rights and things, plus all their knowledge of working in the mines in Wales. And Pennsylvania is the most Welsh Americans, approximately 200,000. They were primarily concentrated in the western and northeastern coal regions of the state. But there's also a lot of migration to Ohio. And as late as the 1900s, Ohio still had 150 Welsh-speaking church congregations. So it's still, you know, a really prominently
very
Welsh place.
I remember reading something somewhere, some like reverend, some boffin who wrote a book, said like you couldn't walk, like, I don't know how many miles it was. You can walk 10 miles in Ohio and hear a different language other than Welsh or something like that at the time, because it was like so prolific.
And there are all these other places all over America that have these Welsh roots. So in Tennessee, there's a bunch of Welsh churches. There's choirs across California. And there's these active Welsh societies in places like San Francisco and Chicago, which you mentioned in last week's episode. And there's also a bunch of US towns and cities that have Welsh origin. So some examples include Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, named after the Welsh town Bryn Mawr, meaning Big Hill. Caernarfon Township in Pennsylvania. Newport, Rhode Island. So while Newport's like a commonplace name, its association with Wales comes from the many Welsh settlers who arrived during the colonial times. There's a Llanfair in Virginia, which reflects the tradition of naming towns after places in Wales. And like you said before, there's Cardiff, Bangor, Swansea, Trefdwyn, Narberth, Gwynedd Valley, Uwchlan, Bala, Penllyn. All over the country, there's a bunch of Welsh names. And finally, in relation to location, North America holds its own version of the Eisteddfod, which is known to be held annually across different areas, similar to how it is in Wales. So in Wales, the Eisteddfod is held in the north and south, alternating every year. And then in North America, so that's Canada and America, they have the North American Festival of Wales, the NAFAW. And what's cool is they also sponsor some of the singing competitions in the Eisteddfod. So there's a prestigious Osborne Roberts Blue Ribbon, or in Welsh, a Rhiban Glas. And whoever wins that in Wales, in the Welsh Eisteddfod, then gets invited to the American NAFAW, and they sing there then. So yeah, so they come and they open up the celebrations. And just like in Wales...
I didn't know anything about that.
No, it's really cool. It does sound pretty cool that they do this every year. And similarly to in Wales, they change the city every year, so it goes across the US and Canada. So they've been to Rochester, New York, Calgary, Ontario in Canada, Columbus, Ohio, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Alexandria, Virginia, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And this all kind of started back... So this has been going on. It's been popular now since like a good couple of like decades. But it really... This started in, like, the first time they did something similar was in 1929, when 4,000 people gathered at Niagara Falls for the first national Gamantha Gan. So they all these Welsh people from around the area joined up at Niagara Falls for a little Welsh sing-song. And they decided from there to make it more of a tradition.
I love that it's still, like, sort of, even all these years later, sort of, just still a bit of a... an annual thing, you know, and the culture is sort of living on. I like that.
And similarly to how the Eisteddfod has become a bit more exclusive and cool, it's becoming more and more popular. The NAFAW thing is becoming like a steadily increasing popular thing that people enjoy, even if you're not 100%, you know, even if you're not fully aware of the Welsh,
a bit more inclusive and like sort of. Even if you're not like a full Welsh speaker over here, you know, like we went to the last one, didn't we? Although admittedly quite piddled. We went and it wasn't just hearing Welsh everywhere, you heard English as well. And it's then the whole thing is to get people involved in the culture, isn't it? That's the main sort of point. That's nice, yeah.
Do you want to do your next one?
Yeah, so I've got a little bit here on some famous Welsh Americans that you might not know of. So in this section, I'm going to talk about Welsh people or people of Welsh descent in America. For this one, because Franco in the last episode covered like politicians, presidents, founding fathers, things like that. So I'm trying to steer away from that a little bit and do kind of the more lesser known people. And the first guy I want to mention is a guy called Robert Everett. He was born in Llanasa in Flintshire in 1791 and then was ordained as a minister in Denby in 1815. I'm fast-forwarding quite through his life because it is really bit doesn't really matter. By 1823, he'd emigrated to America to minister a Welsh church in a place called Utica, New York. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. At the time, this was considered the unofficial capital of the Welsh American community. And then in 1838, he then took charge of two chapels, Capel Ucha and Capel Penmynydd, and pushed hard to convert those in his Welsh-speaking circles to the anti-slavery movement. At the time, America had quite a few Welsh-speaking communities. The Welsh even had their own section of the publishing industry with Welsh newspapers, pamphlets, whatnot, all over the country. Everett would use his connections. Just a callback to what you said in the last episode, I think, where you were on about Abraham Lincoln. He sort of clinched victory by appealing to kind of more minority groups, didn't he?
Yeah.
Including the Welsh and doing like pamphlets and things. So like this is sort of similar in a way. So Everett, he'd use his connections through the church to bring abolition to the forefront of the Welsh language media whenever he could, especially in Y Cenhadwr Americanaidd, or The American Missionary, which was a paper that he was an editor for. He even came up with kind of like what you'd call like a primitive marketing strategy. Yeah, it was a 10-point campaign, and its purpose was to convert Welsh Americans to the cause of abolition.
Oh, cool.
So abolishing slavery, by the way, if I haven't mentioned that already. He also spoke about women's rights and pacifism, which was another couple of things that were not very in fashion at the time. But, you know, so he was kind of progressive for the time, I guess. He apparently also assisted in freeing slaves, which conveniently leads me into another point that I never knew about. So did you know in southern states, there's loads of African Americans with Welsh surnames, apparently?
Yeah, yeah.
And historians are kind of... and they're kind of torn between the two reasons why. So possibility one is there were lots of slave owners of Welsh descent in the South, and that freed slaves, if they didn't take the common surnames of Freeman or Newman, would often take the surnames of their former owners. Apparently this is kind of dubious in terms of evidence. But possibility two is a lot of religious and anti-slavery groups were made up by Welsh Americans that would have assisted the slaves to freedom. And there's evidence of some former slaves adopting the names of their emancipators in some cases. Other former slaves apparently would just pick the surnames of the founding fathers, out of seven of which were Welsh or of Welsh descent. So the chances are they would have picked the Welsh surname without knowing it. And just in case any little Yankee Doodle boffins want to correct me, I know there were 56 actual signatories of the Declaration, 16 of which were Welshies or of Welsh descent. But I'm just on about the kind of the main boys you always talk about, you know, like the the George Washingtons, the Thomas Jeffersons, the John Adams, you're Franklins, you get what I'm saying. So yeah, that was Reverend Rob Everett. He was like a big time abolitionist. And yeah, he was kind of mainly a nice segue into that, what I thought was a very interesting fact about ex-slave surnames.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
And I very much like to think it was the latter, where they took maybe a couple of names from people who helped them, help free them, and the founding fathers, then there was just shitloads of Welsh slave owners. I'd like to think that wasn't true, but again, the bias is shining through.
This film on my watch list for a while on Netflix, called like, I think it's like Matthew McConaughey, and he's like, he fights with his like, I think it's like a slave film where he fights with his like Free State, is it called? Yeah, that's it.
Free State of Jones?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's,
I think that's good. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I think there might be some Welsh link between there, but I'll have to watch it and we'll come back on that one. But that's been on my list for a while to watch. So maybe I should have done that in it's during the American Civil War. He fights with some black soldiers, doesn't he? And it's
something like that. Yeah, I have again. I haven't seen it either.
No, it's just but, the whole point of
Jones,
that film. I think
Welsh
is,
name, Welsh link.
Yeah, he's an abolitionist. He's a big abolitionist, and he like fights with a bunch of either slaves or ex-slaves, and he's down in the South, I think. But I think in there's like a Welsh connection, but a bit tenuous. So I'll have a. Maybe we'll do another
one for the Welsh on film, mate.
Save it for that one. Yeah. So, did you have another person you were doing for this?
I do. So, the next guy I'll chat about is probably actually quite known to the American listeners here, and it's a bit off-piste in that probably less known for us Welsh or further extended Brits. It's a guy named Meriwether Lewis, most famous for his part in the Lewis and Clark expedition of 1804.
Oh, yeah.
But while Lewis was born in Virginia in 1774, his dad, William Lewis, was actually Welsh. And
they spell that the Welsh Lucy, Lewis way, do they? L-E-W-I-S?
Yeah, L-E-W-I-S.
Yeah, I-S, sorry, yes. That's the Welsh version of Lewis.
Lewis, yeah. So his dad was Welsh, William Lewis, and his mum, Lucy Meriwether, was English. So this big-time American boy, he was half Welshy. He's a bit rice, bit chips, but he had some Celtic blood in him. So he was actually, like I said, of Welsh descent. So, you know, you're welcome again, Americans. Basically, why was Lewis such a big deal, I hear you ask? Well, the American listeners, I'm sure, will know this. But Lewis, along with William Clark, was sent as part of the 1803 Corps of Discovery to explore the newly acquired territory of Louisiana during the Louisiana Purchase. They were assigned to map its regions and, quote, establish American sovereignty over the native lands, a.k.a. clear out the indigenous population, essentially, or at least, like, subdue them. Or, I guess, like, get a foothold, something like that, because they were only a kind of small band. But, yeah. This is where the story of Pocahontas comes from, apparently. It's based on Sacagawea, who was a woman of the, and I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation, the Lemmy Shoshone tribe. She served as a guide to Lewis and Clark throughout the territory and when she was just a teenager. So they basically hired this kind of like a indigenous woman to help them navigate through this this new land.
I know the Simpsons so doing Lewis, a good episode on Lewis and Clark, and I think Lisa plays. Can you say her name again? I'll get it
Sacagawea.
Wrong. Yeah, I think Lisa plays it, which probably isn't the most culturally sensitive. and it's Lenny and Carl instead of Lewis and Clark.
Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
God love the Simpsons. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
So Lewis, Clark, Sacagawea, they traveled around 8,000 miles in total with their sort of company.
For context, the US from west to east is like 3,000 miles.
They basically, they went from, I did look this up earlier, I didn't write it down stupidly. They went very much along the Mississippi, like all the way down, and they went down to the sea then, on the southern coast. And then they ended up going back to... where the hell was it now? It was Fort something. Where the hell was it? But anyway, they went with... It wasn't just Lewis, Clark and Sacagawea. They went along with 27 soldiers. There was a French-Canadian interpreter. And also a boat crew that they had to like navigate the rivers.
Yeah.
And then there was Clark's slave, who was called York. And before you go thinking Lewis was above slavery, his mum actually owned a plantation.
Yeah.
He did have slaves, but he left them to work at the plantation instead of bringing them along. He did hire a guy named John Pernia as a valet and a servant for the latter part of the expedition. John was a free African-American and was actually promised a wage for his entire time, a wage that Lewis didn't even pay up until his death. And then that was it. He did. Basically, old John Pernia didn't get any money out of it. So kind of shitty. They did, though, give everyone in the company a vote on matters during the expedition. Even Sacagawea, York, and Pernia. So as shitty as it is to be a slave owner, no matter the decade or time, at least they gave him a vote in that. Maybe not the worst slave owners that have ever existed. So like if you're talking... If you're in a barrel at the bottom, you're not the bottom of the bottom barrel, if that makes sense.
But a piece of shit still stinks, isn't it?
It's still like, a piece of shit. Well, yeah, exactly. You just stink slightly less than one below you.
Yeah.
Hey, I gave him a vote, didn't I? Just because I didn't pay him his wages.
That's like the axe, no, the trees voting for the axe thing or whatever. That stupid.
Yeah, turkeys voting for Christmas. Yeah.
No, what's that thing when they say when the axe made the trees think it was their friend because it was made of wood. It's like
I haven't heard that. That's really good.
I think they compare it to when like Donald Trump appeals to African American young men, and he's like, because he has a big sway with at the moment with young men in general. And I think I've heard someone say it's like the axe convinced the trees he's on their side because he's made of wood.
He'll absolutely do a Meriwether Lewis to you guys if you give Trump gets in. Anyway, so ignoring these massive blemishes on the character, the expedition did huge things for an up-and-coming America because it wasn't quite like a full America at this point. You know, it was still being colonized a lot and whatnot. But they did establish friendly relations with 24 Native American nations. They brought back observations of new plants and animals. And they also created detailed maps and routes through the country to allow safer travel and trade towards the west for generations to come. So, like, anyone that was migrating that way could actually navigate it without, like...
They had a big emphasis on, you know, finding water, didn't they? So you could be close to water sources.
Yeah, so finding fresh water sources. And that basically, they kind of pioneered where all the big settlements would be for later generations. So they did a huge thing for, like, America, if you like, even if they were kind of pieces of shit. But yeah, so that was Meriwether Lewis, another man the Welsh can take credit for, apart from the slavery, obviously. That obviously is from that his was English his, side.
That was his English side, I think you'll find.
That was English side. Once again, we're biased towards our kinsmen. I love as well that the Welsh definitely had slaves as well, because, like, in Holvar's law, there was even, like, a set compensation price for them. But for this, we'll say,
well, that's the thing, weirdly. The Welsh and the British did have slaves up until a point where, like, slavery in the UK just didn't really happen as much. Like, around, like, the Vikings, I think people had started slaves.
Going, probably not all right, is it?
But, you know, you don't really hear slaves in the Norman period. Obviously, they had other atrocities that they'd done, and, you know, what the Brits went on to do in Ireland, you know, like, around the world, things were awful. But it's why, when you mentioned Welsh religious people going over there, it wasn't a part of home culture. Like, people were, like, when American GIs who were black came to Britain during the war and they saw how black people were being treated here compared to how they were at home, it was a huge driving force behind the civil rights movements, because Britain just didn't have a custom of having slaves at home.
Wasn't there that story where it's like during the war, there was, like, ruckus in pubs and things like that, where Americans that were stationed here would be like, I'm didn't not drinking the black if the black guy's in here or something like that. Yeah. And then the British people would be like, well, fuck off then, basically, because it isn't that such. I'm doing it wrong. I'm not saying there's no racists in fucking
that's
Britain,
the weird thing as well, but, because then the UK is incredibly racist. It's like, I don't understand. It's like, I don't know. It's probably, you know, it's hard to kind of understand people's rationale. But yeah, there's that story where the loads of, like, American soldiers got thrown out of the pub for it.
Maybe in, like, the British squaddies, maybe black people were there and they considered them a bit sort of more equal than...
Yeah, but this wasn't even, like, squaddies. These are, like, locals in the pub. And I don't know, I'm not sure. But like I say, like slavery hasn't been ingrained in our society. So when you hear these things in America, it just feels like, what?
It was sort of done, like, you know, well before our time, certainly, and even, like, generations before. It kind of been eradicated here, wasn't it? Even though we were colonizing and essentially enslaving people across the other side of the world. But
because, I mean, like, you had things in America where, like, segregation and stuff was still, like, up until, like, the 60s, you know, it was, like, really prominent. I know you had things here with, like, no dogs, no Irish, but there was, like, a war going on between the British and the Irish, so, like, I don't know if it makes sense. It doesn't make sense, but it's there's more context.
I know what you mean.
It
certainly feels like, again, I'm sure I'm not the fucking scholar on this thing, but, like, it seems like at the same time, like you said, there's a segregation going on in the 60s in America and things like that. It didn't seem there was the same level here, even though it was definitely racism about.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like it was sort of, it was a rule, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's it, because it wasn't like a, I'm not sure. It is strange, but I think, and all those things about, I think it's because it's so recent, like, you know, discovering parts, like when they say they were going off to discover parts of America where there was, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of Native American tribes there, they were kicked off the land and killed, you know, death marches and stuff in a not too distant future past. Whereas when Wales got conquered, it was 800 years ago, when these things happened in the UK, where there's more, you know, similarly conquering each other's lands.
Yeah, people coming into your country and kicking you out. And
that was no one at all remembers that at all, or, like, has any kind of strong link to it. Whereas in the stuff in America, it's all still so recent. Like, you know, there are people who are alive today who still remember
country,
segregation.
America is a young country, as you know, modern America, I mean.
Yeah. It's like schools in England and Wales that are older than America as a USA country.
Yeah, pubs, mate. Always think of that. Pubs in over this country, they're older. But yeah, it's cray-cray, bro.
Sure, shall I move on to the last one? Because I'm conscious of time.
Yeah, go on, your last bit then.
So this is now, this is a bold claim, but for our last story, we're going to discuss whether or not America is named after a Welshman. So, it's going to start off with a man called Richard Ap Merrick, which gets anglicized to Richard Emeric or Ameriki or America. And he's a Welsh merchant royal customs officer and later sheriff of Bristol, who was born circa 1440 and died 1503. So several claims made by for Emeric about loads of like popular writers, especially in the late 20th century, started to repopularize this story of him being the reason why America is called Emeric. The most common theory for why America is called America is because there's this guy called Martin Waldersmuller, who in 1507, his map of the world was the first to show the so-called unknown territory as a separate continent. So it found America, and on there, it's long been credited with naming this new land after the Italian explorer Amerigo Vespucci. So Amerigo becomes America. And that's been the long-held view that this has been named after him as this great explorer. But according to this book by Rodney Broom, which has only come out relatively recently, his book's called Emeric, The Briton Who Gave America Its Name. The country was named in 1496, years before Vespucci's voyage, by a man called John Cabot, who is also a Bristol-based explorer who stumbled on the continent while searching for trading opportunities. So apparently he found America accidentally. Okay. And because Emeric, the guy this is all based upon, this Richard Emeric, who has his name anglicized because he's living in England, he owns Cabot's boat, which is called the Matthew, and he also sponsored and financially supported Cabot. So in turn, Cabot was like, right, thanks to you, I found this place, so I'll name it after you. So he calls it Emeric or America. And according to the author, Broom, he says Cabot didn't know he'd discovered a separate continent during his earlier journey, but he mapped it, the new land he saw in detail, and he named it after the main sponsor of his trip, this Welsh aristocrat, Richard Emeric. So, he was like, he didn't realize the severity of what he found. So maybe he would have named it him if he realized what he discovered. But he was like, right, this big piece of land here. And he started like mapping it and building this like this picture for the British establishment to see what's over there. And yeah, he named it America. So our Welsh lad who made it big, Cheeky Ap Merrick, due to living in England, he had his name anglicized to Emeric. So Ap Merrick became Emeric. He was living as a wealthy landowner and merchant trader, and he lived with his wife Lucy and their two teenage daughters in Bristol's Clifton Manor. So before he moved here, though, he was thought to have come from Wales, maybe Ross-on-Wye, they thought, around Herefordshire-wise, but they found contemporary documents that referred to his background stating he was from Chepstow in Monmouthshire in Wales. So he was living in there and then moved down to Bristol, which isn't too far away. And that's where he became such like a powerful figure in terms of being able to, he made a lot of his fortune through trading with merchants in Spain and Portugal. And towards the latter half of the 15th century, he became this like incredibly rich and incredibly resourceful person. So much so that the king made him the customs officer. And he was also like encouraged heavily by the king to send out his ships on journeys of discovery. So he was like, listen, you obviously got a lot of money, you know what you're doing, you've got these great trade routes.
What can we pillage from elsewhere?
Go discover, go use your links, your skills, and go around and try and find new things in honor of the British Empire. So Cabot, the guy I mentioned at the start, he was given permission by Henry VII, who was king at the time, in 1496 to challenge Columbus in the race to discover a trading route through the mysterious landmass that barred Europe's trade with the valuable opportunities in Asia. So America at the time, the guy, John Emeric, was in the perfect position to sponsor him. So Cabot was given permission by Henry VII. Henry VII also made Emeric the king's custom officer, and together worlds collided. So he was at the absolute perfect time. Right, I've got all this money, you're an explorer. We're doing this because the British want to beat the Italians, and it'd be really helpful for us to establish these trade routes with going to Asia. So according to papers that this writer who's had this whole book about John Ap Merrick, this Broom figure, he discovered in Westminster Abbey's archives, Vespucci and Columbus used Cabot's map secretly As their fame, this is a quote now, as their fame grew and Cabot's declined, the misconception grew that it was they who had named this new land, but in fact it was Cabot. Again, this is like speculation, but this writer, yeah, Broom is convinced that Cabot originally got there first and named it after this Welshman. What also helps to like add to this theory is Emmerich's coat of arms is coincidentally very similar to the United States Stars and Stripes. So if you were to Google at Merrick's, like his coat of arms, it looks really similar to
Merrick.
We could put, maybe put it on
arms. Oh yeah, but yeah, that just screams like America, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we'll put that in the show notes so you can have a little look.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, this is a theory, and it isn't clear with any hard evidence either way who exactly named the USA America. But as a Welsh history-based podcast, I think it's fair to say we could say F off to the Italians, and let's let our boy John Ap Medic be the reason why.
We don't have a big following in bloody Italy anyway.
No, so that's our, we're going to go with John Ap Medic as being our, the reason the beautiful United States of America is named after the United States of John Ap Medic.
Reason what? Number umpteen to be thankful, America, for us beautiful Welsh boys.
Yeah.
Well, get on your knees.
This is your, this has been your USA special. We'll be back to regular broadcasting here on out. But dear and grand to everyone, if you got this far, please drop us a 5-star review and let us know on socials at Tales for Wales what you want us to cover next.
Yeah, diolch, pal. Good luck in the election.
Good luck,
Godspeed to you all.
Good luck in the election, Mike.
Good luck, Lev. Hope it goes all right. Hope it goes your way.
Give me a ring when you get home, Mike.
Let me know how it goes on you, Lev.
All right.
All right, cheers.